Welcome to the Church Podcast, talking all things ministry so you can do church better. I'm your co-host, Chris Wesley, joined by John Rinaldo. John, how are you doing today?
Good morning. I am so excited. Do you want to know why I'm so excited?
Why are you so excited, John?
Well, daylight savings is coming up, and no, we need to start that over again because.
Wow, way to be timely there, John.
No, let's keep going.
So, for those of you listening to this, we are obviously recording before daylight savings, which John is anticipating with such excitement.
Oh, I hate daylight savings, dude. I hate it. It ruins my entire family routine for like a week, dude. It sucks.
I actually like it better than the other time where we gained the hour, because what that means is my boys still get up an hour earlier. So I never get that extra hour of sleep anyhow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you are listening and still listening after that,
after that debacle,
that disaster of a start, I think this will go down in record as the roughest start we've ever had. You hear a third voice, and that's our special guest for today. But John, I'm going to allow you to introduce our special guest to redeem yourself for saying good morning and then also daylight saving, even though this is airing like probably two weeks after all of that has happened. So okay, go ahead, John.
So for the record, it's 5 a.m. here, and I'm really not awake right now, so that's part of it. But anyways,
like we've never recorded at 5 a.m. before.
I know, but you know, today was particularly difficult. Okay, let's get past that. I'm super excited because this young man I've known for quite a few years. I've had the opportunity to work with him in the National Federation for Catholic Youth Ministry, you know, just doing a ton of stuff there at conferences. We've actually presented a workshop together way back, if you remember that. And so, but I'm really excited. Our guest today is the one, the only Mr. Doug Tuke from all sorts of fame. And we're going to hear all about kind of all the things that he's doing. But man, oh man, I tell you, this is a voice that you need to listen into because he has got wisdom to share in the church. And Doug, I'm so excited you're here. Thanks for coming on board today.
It is a pleasure. I'm a young man. I'm older than you are, buddy. Don't kid yourself. Holy smokes.
I'm the elder statesman
on this show.
Yeah, but if you listen to how John talks and see how he dresses, he definitely does age us both.
It's true. Wow. No, it's a pleasure, guys. This is great work. You're doing a great job. This is a great show. I'm looking forward to it. I'm honored by the invitation.
Well, thank you.
When John and I were talking about people we wanted to have on the show, you were definitely at the top of that list. And, you and I don't go as far back as you and John do, but I think we met each other for the first time physically in San Jose. Mm-hmm. At the National Catholic Youth Ministry Conference. It was just like a quick, like, hey, we got to connect. And then finally this past like October, right, in Dallas, we actually sat down and broke bread. And
that was a treat.
You watched me cry as my Yankees lost to the Astros.
and I cheered.
And you cheered.
The rest of the country.
That's right. Yeah. But evil empire is back. You know, I have to say that was definitely one of the highlights of my 2017, was getting a chance to just grab a bite and a beer with you and talk life. John mentioned this before. You've got a lot going on, which is kind of funny to think about because you just stepped away from like a huge, you made a huge transition in your life recently. Why don't you tell people a little bit of a brief history of your ministry life and how you got to where you are today?
You bet. Thanks. I echo your appreciation for baseball, beer, and conversation. That's how mm-hmm. I like to spend my evenings. I've done youth ministry for 21 years. I was a diocesan director for the last 10. It was just time for me to move on. Some opportunities were coming, and it was a little scary. I have 5 kids. You know, I'm very much the breadwinner for my home. My wife and I very much are the types of folk that trust the Spirit, but we also love having a plan, you know, so I wasn't really going to throw caution to the wind in that way. So I put out like, I wrote about 5 or 6 proposals to companies that I really like, that I think are doing good work. And all 5 of them came back saying, yeah, let's do this. So then I had to kind of navigate what that work was going to be. And one of them was with ODB Films, who recently collaborated with Sony Affirm Films to produce the Paul Apostle of Christ movie. And we'll talk more about that later on. Right. The other was Life Teen. I appreciate what Life Teen does. They just simply are good writers, and they are just great marketers. I did some work with St. Mary's Press. I did some consultation with some other dioceses. But after about 4 months, what had fleshed out was developing rural and combined parish ministries with Life Teen and taking on a more serious role with ODB Films. And so those two things have really taken the cream off the top in terms of my time. My work with Life Teen is very adjunct. It's very consultation based. Sure. I'm not a full-time staff member, although Mark Hart released a little video with me standing next to him and everybody thought I was moving to Mesa, which I thought was pretty funny. But no, I'm in Helena, Montana in my wonderful little home office, just working, doing parish coaching and teaching. And my role with ODB Films has escalated. We actually changed my title in January to Director of Marketing and Development. Nice. So it's way more responsibilities than I thought we were going to have. Made a mid-year switch, but oh my goodness, there's a lot brewing. So I come out of a background of youth ministry, parish, multi-parish, and diocesan. And now I'm kind of steering all my energy towards those two endeavors.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy. And like just to be able to take on those challenges and, you know, I know, like, yeah, I remember seeing the announcement about Life Teen and then you mentioning ODB. And we're going to talk about those two subjects. In fact, you mentioned that you are in Montana, which for our listeners that know, I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. John is in San Jose, California. And those two places could not be any more different than Montana, true. You know. And
but I love all three of them. I think they're great. Right. I love all three of them.
And you know, like this was something we were talking about before we hit record on this. But you know, John and I, our experience in ministry really comes from a suburban or urban setting, and you know, there are unique challenges. There are similarities, but. You know, I've noticed, especially the more that Marathon Youth Ministry has grown and working with youth ministers who live in more rural areas, the challenges that they face are something that, like, I don't really have to think about. We were joking before that, you know, as a youth minister, if I forget to buy something for my program, I can just walk across the street and there's a Target, a Walmart, you know, a supermarket, you know, a Party City, whatever, where I could buy those resources where that might not be the case in more rural or smaller towns that are doing ministry. So that's one of the more obvious challenges. But I would say, like, you know, in regards to rural church ministry, and we're not just going to focus on youth ministry, but rural church ministry, mm-hmm. What would you say is the single biggest challenge that rural churches face when it comes to doing ministry?
That's a great question. So the data there is pretty clear, and it's kind of entertaining. The number one challenge is community. Community is small in number and usually more limited in resource. And the same data says the number one asset is community, that it's small in number and that there's an intimacy and a demand for accountability. So when what little data there's not a lot of Catholic data, but there's some good non-denominational data about churches. One of the statistics I love to throw out is that 35% of brand new pastors are assigned to rural faith communities.
Really? Wow.
So for those of us that are in lay ministry, that's a big deal. It's a big deal for our clergy as well, but it's a big deal for lay ministers because we've all had that experience, suburban, urban, or rural, where we're working for a new pastor who maybe doesn't kind of have his ducks in a row. Maybe she or he, they just haven't put it all together yet. For the Catholic Church, Catholic priests, there's so much newness to becoming the master administrator of a facility. A lot of times we'll get swept under the rug as any lay ecclesial ministry, and then it becomes a source of stress. I've seen that among more rural faith communities than you can fathom. And now with the dawn of international priests, a lot of foreign-born priests that are imported into dioceses are given assignments in rural communities. I'm not saying that's a bad thing as much as it's a very steep challenge that was never addressed. How will this Ghana-born priest navigate a staff of volunteer women in rural America? And I we never really asked that question. So what I find in the outlying dioceses that I do a lot of work in is a lot of just communication barriers and just complete misunderstanding for how to execute lay ecclesial ministry, and just the simple approaches to youth ministry that we take for granted that are just not, that just are not communicated well to pastors. And you guys know as well as I, everybody knows that listens to this. If you don't have communication channels with the leadership of your faith community, everything you do will break down. It will all break down if you can't communicate it clearly. So that's a piece that has been really prevalent in the Catholic Church, but it's not a Catholic challenge. I, you know, limited resources. You joke about going across the street to Target to buy something. I could tell you, I could name 50 examples of rural parishes that don't have a budget, you know? So like, they're not going to buy anything, you know, like there's, it's whatever mom made that week. That's the treat, you know? So there's this massive like economic filter that we drench over the top of small church as well. All of which I say with some hesitation, because what you find too, is you find a young person that is maybe a little more mature. They've been kind of like tapped into the workforce earlier. They've maybe been taught, not always, but maybe been taught the value of hard work at a younger age. So rural America presents itself with some pretty amazing gifts. I just don't think we've maybe harnessed them in the context of ministry the way that we could.
That's really helpful. Now, one of the things that, that you and I, Doug, did a long time ago is we did some workshops and some development around multi-parish youth ministry. And I was involved in some multi-parish youth ministry, again, in a suburban setting here in Northern California. And you were involved in the rural setting. So when you're dealing with communities that are small in number, which you just said is both a strength and a weakness, how much clustering or how much multi-parish work is happening to help kind of bridge that gap? And what are the pros and cons of some of that multi-parish collaboration that may or may not be happening?
Yeah, you're strumming my heartstrings now. I did my master's thesis on youth ministry and multi-parish ministry. So there you go. The CARA data says 27% of Catholic parishes in the United States of America are doing clustered ministries. That's more than a fourth. That's unbelievable. Now, that doesn't mean that they're completely clustered. It means that they have a ministry that they're sharing. The rural church has taken the lead in a lot of that. But, you know, Baltimore, for example, where clusters are mandated, pastorates, I should say, northern New York, southern New York, it's very, very popular. My experience is you have the immediate tensions that come from pastoral leadership is I don't want to lose my parish identity. You know, if all of our young people are going to share a ministry or we're going to share a pastoral council, I'm worried that St. Thomas, St. Leo's, and St. Mark's will not have their own identity anymore. The other thing is money. I mean, the number one thing is money. If you want to have a person, a lay ecclesial person, serving as a multi-parish minister, there's just an immediate danger who's in charge. So if there's multiple pastors managing a single layperson, there's just kind of a lack of learning curve for how to manage that person. So a lot of the work I've done in multi-parish ministry, and I got to tell you, John was at the table. John was at the table when we first conceived the idea of even having like a little committee to engage the conversation, let alone try to create resources. My thing is just job descriptions. That's a huge thing, is to be able to hand pastors specific articulated expectations and maybe give them some management skill set, but also to address identity, to say you're greater than the sum of your parts. I mean, you give St. Leo's and St. Thomas and St. Mark's a reason to be who they are when you cluster, because now you're calling upon the services of that faith community to be part of the shared whole.
Yeah.
I mean, we use the term, you become a community of communities. That came out of the Emerging Models of Ministry project in the early 2000s, and it couldn't be more popular than today, which is this community you've built is greater. You can do more because you're together. But I'll tell you what, selling that to small faith community with limited pastoral leadership is nothing less than an absolute uphill battle. And it's got to come from the people and from the hierarchy in terms of solution-oriented mandates. And we're seeing that in some places, but I'll tell you what, you just wouldn't believe the tension that you see in the United States of America, rural America, where parish communities are clustering together. There's a lot of work to be done there. It's the reason why LifeTeen responded to my inquiry. I said, hey, Randy Rouse, you're incredible at what you do. You have nothing for small church. You have nothing for clusters. And he responded by saying, "You pointed out a blind spot. Help me do this." I mean, and it was immediate. He knew right away. He's like, "This is crazy. We have to name these things." So all the kudos in the world to Life Team to say, "Oh my goodness, we have not named that reality." And I love that. I love that about a big organization that's successful in ministry to be able to say, "We're not doing that well. Let's make it better."
So you led, sorry, Chris, I'm going to jump in, but you led right to a follow-up idea that I've talked about for a long time and haven't really grasped how to deal with it, but that a lot of the resources that come out for church ministry, for church leadership, for youth ministry, for whatever it is, seems to be targeted to what I would describe as a suburban middle class kind of way of living and being. And maybe that's because a lot of us maybe come from that. I would say I certainly come from that kind of suburban middle class kind of upbringing. And so I bring that lens to the table. What's your sense in terms of exactly what you mentioned with Life Teen and others, in terms of what are the resources that are out there? How do resources need to change to adapt to the reality that you just described?
Yeah, that's the golden question. Here's what I would say. Suburban churches have money. I mean, the reality behind resource development is those are companies that are going to market resources to places that can buy them. I mean, that goes without saying. What's been fun with the Life Team consultation is there's a real open mind toward what can we give away. And I haven't found a publisher that's willing to do that the way they are. They go out there and do a fundraiser and say, "We are raising money to give things away for free." And then the other part to your question is, a resource for rural and combined parish ministries has to be uber simplified. Mm-hmm. It has to be structurally simple. This is something Chris is really gifted at, is the notion of small group management and small group leadership. So if you take a resource like the Summit series from Life Teen, which is a lectionary Bible study. Okay, anybody can do lectionary Bible study. Right. They just have a resource that helps you do it. If you can get small churches, volunteer moms, to navigate good, healthy lectionary Bible study, they're catechizing, they're building community, they're teaching the faith, and they're equipping young people with the vocabulary of faith to teach it to others. Right. What's amazing is people don't believe they can do it.
Right.
They just
right.
don't believe they can do it. They don't believe that the simplicity of the Bible study is a brilliant premise for excellent Catholic outreach to young people. And I think that breaking through that false learning curve of worthiness is really the mission of great rural and great clustered resources, because they don't have to be expensive, and they don't have to be curricular, and they don't have to be all encompassing. They really just need to be about Jesus. They need to be confidence builders. That's where I've seen success in workshopping and teaching.
You know, it's interesting, going back to something you said, where when I asked you what the single biggest challenge is, and you said one of the biggest challenges is forming community, but then at the same time, it's one of the biggest opportunities or one of the biggest blessings to what you do. And I think that's the same case in not just rural, but suburban and even urban ministry. It's just how community is formed looks differently. Because I remember years ago when I was polling my students, at the end of the year, saying, like, what was your favorite part about ministry? And, hands down, over the games, over the talks, over the prizes, it was always small groups. And I think that all of us, you know, adults, teens, are craving that kind of community. That willingness to be known. And yeah, I think you're right. It's the simplicity of some of the materials that we have. I mean, you know, we've got the Bible, we've got the catechism, and if we can just, you know, encourage people to pick those up, to immerse themselves in that and then share it. I mean, it sounds so simple that it shouldn't be that hard, but simple is not always easy in that regards, for sure. What I'm curious about is, all right, so most times in a rural setting, and I've actually kind of experienced this firsthand because my father-in-law lives up in New Hampshire, in rural New Hampshire, and so for him to get to Mass, he's got to drive, like, he's one of the closer ones, he's got to drive an hour, right? But there are people who are driving throughout the whole state to get there. And you know, it makes me think about, like, if I'm making this huge effort to go to Mass, it's not, do you feel like, like, what are some best practices you see churches do to make that, like, journey, that travel worth it? for parishioners to drive hours to come to Mass to receive the Eucharist.
Yeah, that's you're naming spot on, especially some of the urban the more super farming communities.
Right.
My experience with that is that you partner up a lot of what you're doing. If you're doing kind of an intentional programming for adolescents, you have to partner that with when they're in town, which is what? That's Sundays and that's sports. So like when the rural community gathers around, they love their high schools. Their high schools are a rallying point. What you see solution wise is you see great rural youth ministers navigating more of a family approach on Sundays. And I'm not a super big advocate for total parish catechesis in the context of when the 80-year-old, the 8-year-old, and the 18-year-old are all at a table doing the same thing. I'm not a fan of that. But having all the families in the faith community and serving the proper ages is a tremendous gift. And you see a lot of success with that, and you see a lot of buy-in. But the other piece is, and these are the really good youth rural ministers, are the ones that really navigate the community. So there's a pep rally for the game. There's this event on Tuesdays, and they always partner some sort of like fellowship or meal with what they're trying to get excited about in the community, or they'll do their direct service ministries right after school in the local cafe, knowing that young people are still around and they can gather them. That's brilliant to me. What you don't see is that Sunday night, Wednesday night thing work, because it's exactly what you say. They're not going to drive. And if they do drive, they're driving by themselves. And you're telling that little 16-year-old girl that 2-hour commute is worth it, you know, that you just got to be there for the thing. And that's not good ministry. Ministry is like, go to her, you know, and serve her. You also see less frequency. So, you don't see that weekly gathering as much as you see twice a month or based on the young people's schedules. When do you want to meet? You see before school programming. We have some tremendous before school Bible study series going on in our diocese, 50, 60 kids gathering at 6:30 in the morning at the coffee shop, having a way more life-giving experience. And then their youth group on Wednesday is like 20 kids. And the same youth minister is like, I can't get them. You're like, no, you did get them. You got them and it was great. And you went to them. So there's a lot of solution-oriented ministry experiments that we've done over the last 20 years here that I know have bore fruit. And those young people, man, equip them with scripture. You guys know this. Get out of the way. I mean, a generation of Catholics that know the word, that's the goods.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting to think, you know, that sometimes I think we measure success all wrong. Like, you know, you mentioned they get upset that only 20 kids show up to the youth ministry, yet they were just serving, you know, 3 times that much, you know, at a pep rally for a football game. And it really does make you think about like, okay, like how are we valuing success? Like, you know, I know the pressure in suburban campuses, especially not just in a youth ministry setting, is we need more people on campus all the time, every single day. And, you know, it's overwhelming.
There's not enough space on campus for that. So it doesn't make sense. Like, every church that I've worked at never has space for all the meetings they're supposed to happen. So come on.
It's definitely. So
measuring tools are they're pretty misinterpreted, to say the least.
We got to throw it out the window and I think revisit that as well, for sure.
So let me ask that question then. You know, in a rural setting, and maybe this is true in a suburban urban setting as well, Doug, what does success, you know, I put that in quotes, what does success really look like when you're talking about trying to create intentional disciples and trying to evangelize? What does that look like? And how might that differ, if at all, from maybe a suburban urban setting?
All right. The risk of presenting an extremely cheesy transition to a conversation about Paul. Here's how I would address that is I ask a lot of times in training and in servicing, how did Paul's church communities measure spiritual status? Like, how were they, like, how did they gain authority? You know, there was no ordination. And the answer to the question is spiritual experience. So by the nature of spiritual experience, deep-seated experiences, like, and I mean, at the risk of saying it, you know, charismatic and like mystical spiritual experience determined the role of the person in these early churches, which were small groups. You know, we know this. Right. Scholars know that Ephesus was like 30 people. Corinth was like 25 people. I think that in rural church where great spiritual experience is promulgated, and I mean that, I mean like deep-seated prayer, Great prayer experience for young people. Bible study, like we've talked about before. Fellowship, which gives young people an opportunity to celebrate their Christian identity in community, right? And equipping them with the language to share the word. And sacramental, which means coming to the table. When those things are done super well, when that identity piece is done well, I think it conquers. I think it conquers. There's just too many young people, too many vocations have come out of brilliantly led, deeply spiritually based community in the name of early church, in the context of, well, this is who we are. There's only six of us. We gather once a week. What else are we going to do? We're going to do icebreakers? Like, it's not, that's not going to happen. Kids don't want to do that stuff. They want to be together. They want to share the word. They want to push each other's authentic testimony. God forbid we teach young people testimony. Right. Those pieces promulgate the early church. And that's where I've seen success. But man, I go back to my original statement. There are so many volunteers in the church that feel so ill-equipped and they feel incompetent to sit in a circle and witness faith. And that's the issue. I mean, that's really what it comes down to in a lot of rural places.
Well, and I think that's where the formation needs to take place. You know, I think that's where DREs, youth ministers, you know, if you're in charge of RCIA, you need to say, okay, like, I need to form these other adults to expand my capacity to pour into the men and women, teenagers or kids that I'm serving. I got to first pour into the adults who are going to help me so that they have that confidence. I got to pour into, you know, the parents. Like, I think from the confirmation standpoint, one thing that we're working on is how much are we pouring into the sponsors? The sponsor is supposed to be the person who's going to walk with this kid for the rest of their life, right? Mm-hmm. And yet I have yet to see, you know, even in previous renditions of confirmation programs I've put together, I've done a poor job of forming the sponsors. And so it's kind of like, you know, why aren't we putting more energy and emphasis into that as well as the parents? And, you know, stronger adult disciples, you're going to have stronger next generation disciples as well.
Last 3 years, Chris, I've been doing some part-time work at a small parish, and the confirmation that we've done, mandatory every single time we gather, which is only like seven times, mandatory sponsor and parents at every gathering.
Nice.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Every gathering. And what happened is, I'll tell you why it's awesome, is because sponsors did not have that experience. Parents did not have that experience. So now it's an adult formation experience where the young person is witnessing the adult's formation. The adults are like part of the young person's formation, and the accountability pours out the windows. I mean, and they don't know what to do with it because it's exactly what you just said. You have to kind of throw down and say, wait a minute, we're in this together.
Right.
And I'll tell you, and I think that we had success with that because of the rural nature of where I live. It's like, they were like, oh yeah, I guess it's like coaching, you know, it's accountability. I gotta shepherd this young person.
Definitely.
A quick question, you know, in terms of technology, what role, obviously there's all sorts of tools now that we are able to use to kind of bridge the distance that may exist between, you know, communities or whatnot. So what role does technology play in a rural parish setting in terms of doing all the things that you're talking about?
Yeah, we have trained homing pigeons, and then we would just roll up scrolls and duct tape them to the legs. Technology has a lot of limits where I live, and has a lot of limits in the rural church. And I'll tell you why. It's not because of accessibility. It's because of user error. So there's a steep learning curve. If I wanted to do a training and service, you know, like in the spirit of what, you know, what we do, and say, hey, we're going to use Zoom, we're going to do GoToMeeting, we're going to do a Google Hangout or whatever else, the process of actually giving adults the confidence to do that, let alone the content of the presentation, in my experience in the diocese, proved almost disabling. And then the other piece of that was it proved itself to be all about relationships. I found I would go to my most rural deaneries, which I have a heart for. I love the farm country. I'd go to the busier deaneries, and it would be kind of like, get it done, here we go, you're wasting my time. I'd go to the rural deaneries, and it was a potluck. And we would schedule an additional 45 minutes to be together to share a meal. And then the conversation had to be different. The conversation had to be much more to the point and a lot less chatty chatty. It was always kind of like, so how can you help us? So there was like this deep sense of like triage and like care that had to come from the office that I adored. And it put me on the spot because there were times I couldn't help. I can't help you make your kids like you. If young people don't like you, they don't want to be around you. I mean, what else can, you know what I mean? So technology wouldn't help in those situations. Whereas in other places, we could make a quick meeting. We could certainly provide video resources.
Right.
There's
right,
umpteen publishers that create those. You know, having a Mike Schmitz video or using a TED Talk to do great youth ministry. Those are great things. But if you don't have the user ability to connect them and to use them fluidly, young people will just scoff at you. They just scoff right. at you. So there had to be a balance there.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you suggesting then that in some of these rural settings, like they're just not using technology on a regular basis, or they don't have as much know-how about it, and so that becomes a barrier then? Is that basically what you're saying?
It's both and. It's also a bit of a cul-de-sac because the adults, the parents that I worked with in most communities were like, I'd rather just talk to you. Like even if they know how, even if at work they're doing webinars, they're like, I'd really rather just talk to you. And so, you know, what I tell young Dawson, right? I do the new Dawson Directors Institute every year. And when we have younger rural Dawson directors, I'm like, learn to work the phones and live in your car. Like that. I mean, the reality behind a lot of success has to come from the fact that you personally are talking to folks and you're willing to go out. Mm-hmm. And if that's not in the works, you're going to struggle. It's going to slow down your progress as a Dawson director of youth ministry in the long term, in rural settings, in my opinion. Although I would say that's probably pretty true for suburban and urban. We just probably don't tap into it as much. You got to get on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you've touched on some really good points. I think we could spend like a whole like couple of hours just hashing this out even further. And we'll definitely have to have you back on. But I want to talk about something that's coming up real quick, that's coming up real soon. And that's the movie Paul that you just mentioned. Tell us a little bit about just kind of the genesis of that movie. Like, and you know, you mentioned how you got involved with ODB Films, but tell us a little bit more of why you're excited about this film and why it's not just another cheesy Christian movie. So.
Right, right. Well, Chris got to see the film. He got to screen the film. So when Chris says that, he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. ODB Films is a Catholic nonprofit company in the Diocese of Rockford, Illinois, consecrated to Mary. I mean, it is a Catholic company.
That's awesome.
Through the great work of Andrew Hyatt, who is a writer-director that's worked with ODB in the past, they created a script for the Apostle mm-hmm. Paul, and Sony, Affirm Films, read it, bought it. Everybody was celebrating, oh my gosh, I can't believe Sony bought our script. And then Sony said, now go make the movie, which is very rare, very rare that right, Sony would turn around and go back to the production agency and say, go make this. Here's $6 million. Go make this movie. So Eric Groth, the executive producer, TJ Bearden, who's the lead producer, and Katie Reedy, who's the director of operations for ODB, and then me, the marketing guy, those three, they did. They, you know, they went to the island of Malta. They shot the film. They got Caniezel. Right. They got James Faulkner. They got Olivier Martinez and John Lynch, Joanne Whaley, these talented actors and actresses. And in my opinion, broke the mold. Jim Caviezel was on a talk at the University of Franciscan University with Raymond Arroyo from EWTN moderating, and Scott Hahn and Eric Groth on a panel 2 days ago. And Jim Caviezel said, I can't stand most Christian films. He said, they try to put way too much sugar in your coffee. That was his line. And he said that he said it is. And I thought he was going to say something else with the shh, but he came out with sugar, which I thought was great. He said, he's like, it's too sweet. It's too sweet. And he said, the Christian journey isn't like that. There's blood and guts and it's tough. Now I want to be clear. The Paul movie is not The Passion of Christ. Anytime you mention Caviezel, everybody mentions The Passion. Don't get me wrong. The Passion's breathtaking. It's a rated R film though. Yeah. And we knew that we wanted to create a film that was accessible to families, but also still told the story. I think the film does that. I also think it's a beautiful film. It's beautifully written. Andrew Hyatt is an unbelievably talented writer. He incorporated the language of scripture into the dialogue of the film seamlessly. You find anybody who's in ministry watches this film and they listen, they go, oh my gosh, that's 1 Corinthians. He just said, well, I mean, that was amazing.
That was my favorite part of the film where Paul, I think, is laying on his side and he's saying, your grace is sufficient, your grace is sufficient. Because that's like one of my favorite scripture verses from Corinthians. And so, you know, and just kind of like, you know, like the tension and the battle between Luke and Paul about writing the story and, you know, Luke sneaking into the prison and everything. You know, it's a story that I think we all know, but then it's a story that we don't know. And I think the other part that really moved me was discovering what Paul was being tormented with, right? You know, like he talks about it in scripture, but I don't think it really ever hit me the way that the movie portrays it. And so I really appreciated that. And I'm going to definitely see it again. I'm excited to take some of my volunteers and youth to it as well. And it comes out March 23rd, correct?
March 23rd, yeah. Yeah, March 23rd. Scott Hahn said about James Faulkner's performance of Paul that you will never listen to the words of his letters in the same way again. And I think that's true. I think when you see the performance and you hear his voice, it will transform the way you understand and love him as a saint and a true apostle.
Well, and it was amazing too, because, seeing some of his previous works, I was just like, yeah, that's like a,
right.
I do watch Game of Thrones and Downton Abbey, which couldn't be, two different like genres of shows, but, he's such a great actor. And then I wasn't distracted by the fact that Jim, played Jesus and now he's playing Luke. So I thought
he definitely made it work.
Yeah. It was great. So
James, I will say this, James has said this about himself and I think it's a beautiful line. He says, I played villains my whole life. You know, he's a British actor who's played villains his whole life.
Yeah.
And he said all of that, he said that led him to Paul. He said, so I played a villain. He said, I played a villain that was redeemed. Yeah. And there's a lot of stories, but he was moved. He was moved. Yeah.
Definitely. So, if I were only to take one group of people with me to the film, would it be, who would it be? Would it be my volunteers? Would it be the youth? Would it be my coworkers? Like, if I could only take one group with me to see this film.
That's tough. I mean, I would take influencers. I would take the people that will take other people. That's who I would take. I really believe that, Chris. I wouldn't say it if I didn't believe it. I think this film is going to be a tool for all ministers, young adult, adult formation, and youth. But it's a tool. The way The Passion was, and I'm not the first person to say that. Jim Caviezel said it. He said this film bookends The Passion. I mean, that's pretty profound considering all the Christian movies that have taken place in the last 20 years, or since 04, I should say. You know, so that's pretty powerful. But I would take influencers. And it's easy. It's as easy as going to paulmovie.com. And looking at group ticket sales, of which are absolutely setting records, by the way.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So they're seeing group ticket sales fly through the ceiling. And some of your listeners will love this. Like, Catholics are doing it. And getting Catholics to go see a Christian film is nothing less than parting the Red Sea. So there's something going on there where the heart of the Catholic faithful are like, oh, this has value, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Very cool. Well, and I tell you, I can't wait till ODB Films makes the life story of John Ronaldo happen.
Woo!
I think that might break Paul.
Give me a script, Chris. I know a guy.
I'll write a script. I'll write a script for that. We'll make that
I'm
happen.
I'm interested in that. Hey, quickly before we wrap up, though, please do tell people about your podcast as well, Doug, because I absolutely adore your podcast. I just think it's so valuable. So tell people what that is, where that came from, and where they can find it.
Sure. Feelings Mutual. I love what you guys are doing. I started a podcast a couple years ago called Renovo. It's a very simple 20-minute show. It takes a topic in the church that maybe isn't as explored as it ought to be and just celebrates it. So it's really formative. It's theme-based. We've done shows on why we have pews, what are candles, stained glass, to what the church actually teaches about homosexuality, Gregorian chant, the use of the organ. I mean, we just take all the things that the bells and smells that we see and encounter and say, wait a minute, why is this thing? We did a show on the Crusades. We did a show on the Inquisition.
Awesome.
We've done a show on the devil. So there's a lot of, there's just topics and it's easy. It's a commute. It's going for a jog. It's the drive to work.
Mm-hmm.
RenovoPodcast.com or iTunes. And it's a blast. I love it.
And I will say that I think it could be a great tool for faith formation as well.
Yeah.
I think the way you break open some of those topics is really incredible. And I can see it being used in ministry as well. So kudos to you, Doug. You are doing amazing, amazing work in ministry and marketing. And so I am just so thankful to be a co-worker with you here in the Vineyard. So thanks for all the gifts that you bring. And thank you so much for being part of this podcast. This was enlightening for me. So thank you so much.
Thanks,
definitely. And Doug, just one last time, tell people where else they can find you if they want to connect with you.
Yeah, DougTuke.com, RenovoPodcast.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, DTuke1, and all that jazz.
Cool. And we'll provide links to the Paul movie and the podcast on here for sure. And, you know, if any of you guys have questions, you can definitely shoot them our way to questions@thechurchpodcast.org. Always visit our website, thechurchpodcast.org, for some of the links and things that you can't get on iTunes. And if you are on iTunes, definitely leave us a review. Share this with your friends and your family, your neighbor, or even the person you don't like. Just share it. We want to get the word out there. That we're talking all things ministry so that you guys can do church better. And John, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, of course. JohnRinaldo.com is my website. Trying to do some videos and some writing there. And of course, on Twitter, my favorite social media tool is @JohnRinaldo. And you can also find me on Facebook at John M. Rinaldo.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Chris R. Wesley, Facebook at Marathon Youth Ministry, and my site is marathonyouthministry.com. Doug, once again, it was such a pleasure to have you. John, it's always great to have these conversations with you as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We love you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye. Take care.